Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Justin Cuthbert and Ailish Forfar this morning. Make sure you subscribe to the Fan Morning Show podcast wherever you get your pods. Toss us a follow on social media at Ailish Forfar and at Justin Cuthbert. Week two of the NFL season wrapped up. I'm sure we'll get into your fantasy football in the wake and rake. Some people happy with last night's success. Some people, like myself, going against Stephon Diggs, didn't enjoy last night's success from a fantasy football standpoint. But nonetheless, our next guest knows all about the highs and the lows, being a fan, covering the sport, and being out on the field. It's Sam Acho, former NFL linebacker and current ESPN analyst. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Glad to be here.
You got to see a young Josh Allen. You were with the Bills training camp in 2019. The way he has just blossomed into an MVP in all aspects of the game. Did you always believe that this was the future for him?
No, to be honest, I didn't. And part of it was when I first got to Buffalo, people forget, I think 2018, his rookie season, he didn't do so well, right? His first season, 10 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. People in Buffalo were questioning Josh Allen. The fans of Buffalo were saying, man, well, I don't know if he's the guy. I don't know if he's the future. That's how I entered, you know, when I first met Bills Mafia, right, that 2019 training camp. And then that season, he just went off, and he just took off. Now, mind you, I saw it myself. I was highly and thoroughly impressed. But what I've heard beforehand didn't match what I saw. He got better. Like, he improved. And then he's consistently gotten better year in and year out. It's almost like he's – you know, it's like his powers have grown, right? He's believing more in his ability and in himself. There was that, I think it was a 3rd-and-1 or 4th-and-1 last night where he just kept it, or actually a 3rd-and-8 or something like that, kept it himself, ran over somebody, right? Jumped over, put his hand down and rolled over for the first down. Like, Josh Allen is a man amongst boys. Like, he's a quarterback, yes, but he's built like a defensive end, right? He's got the arm of a, you know, the throw with the best of them. So I did not always believe, but then when I saw him and met him and like his physical presence, it made me a believer.
That raw talent on display, it seems like every week with Josh Allen, and it's clear that he is a special talent, but there's something about the environment when it comes to a football player, or and more specifically a quarterback. I think we're seeing it with Jalen Hurts in Philadelphia, just put in a good position to pull out the best of his skill set. And I think that happened with Allen too. I think he was going to be a good quarterback regardless, because the skills, as you mentioned, are immense. But I think the environment that Buffalo's put him in has been really, really beneficial. And having a guy like Stephon Diggs to form a partnership with, how much do you think Buffalo, you know, in terms of meshing and the partnership that this franchise and this quarterback have, has meant to pulling the best out of Josh Allen as a football player?
It's everything. I mean, it's everything. You could be the most talented quarterback, but if you don't have good talent around you, or better yet, good coaching, your best won't come out. And that's what gets me so excited about Buffalo. Buffalo, they went out and got Stephon Diggs. They needed a number one receiver, so they got Stephon Diggs. They've improved their offensive line. They had Brian Daboll for those 4 years. Now they have Ken Dorsey, so that's what gets me excited about them. But even more specifically, with Philadelphia Eagles, you saw all the offseason moves that the Eagles have made to make their team better. I mean, like, they went draft night. No one knows what's going to happen. All of a sudden, A.J. Brown is your number one receiver, and you already have a first-round pick in Devontae Smith. So you're getting better and better. And that's just on the offensive side. The defensive side of the ball, they go and draft Jordan Davis from the Georgia Bulldogs. They go and get James Bradbury, who's one of the top corners. I mean, like, the Hassan Reddick, who had double-digit sacks the year prior. The defensive side of the ball, they got better. And so it helps you as a quarterback or as a player in your development. Yes, when you have talent around you, but when you're in the right environment to help you grow. You said earlier, well, we all knew Josh was going to be, you know, this great quarterback. We didn't. we really didn't, because his first year he didn't look like one. Even in college at Wyoming, people said he's like this raw talent. We didn't know. But thankfully you had the GM, Brandon Bean, the head coach, Sean McDermott, and then all this talent and offensive coordinator and this mind and this belief, and it just breeds this greatness. That's what we saw in Philly, we see in Buffalo, and usually when you see these good quarterbacks, that's what they have around them.
And for that reason, it could be, you know, a preview, not a preview because they didn't play each other, but a snapshot of what we could see in more meaningful games down the stretch here with Philly and Buffalo sort of rising through the first 2 weeks of the NFL season. But if you were to compare, like, you can't compare the quarterbacks. Josh Allen's probably the bigger talent in that he has the arm strength that Jalen Hurts might not have or doesn't have just yet. But in terms of their supporting cast, like, I was marveling at the offensive line play from Philly last night. Jalen Hurts has a ton of weapons as well. Which of the two situations would be better for a quarterback? Would it be Philly or Buffalo?
I'd say Buffalo, only because I think there's a more proven – I would say Buffalo, probably because I was there before, so I kind of know them a little bit more. But also, I think there's more consistency. Leslie Frazier, that is as a coordinator, Buffalo had the number one defense last year. And so you talk about supporting cast, I think the defense in that supporting cast matters. So that's why I would go Buffalo. Now, on the other hand, with Philly, we were kind of like wondering for the last couple of years or so, will the Eagles allow Jalen Hurts to go? Or will they say, you know what, we're going to use all these draft picks and go get a quarterback or save them up and get a quarterback next year? And we've seen that Philly's invested fully. So, like, personally, I say Buffalo partly because I've been there. But the other side of it is, look at those receivers. A.J. Brown went crazy in week one. Right? Well, Devontae Smith had a really good game. And then even Jalen Hurts, like, his ability with that offensive line. I still, like I said, I lean towards Buffalo because just my defensive mindset. You got the number one defense. How do you beat that? But Philly is trying to build something special. And, I mean, look at the NFC East right now. Injured quarterback in Dallas. New York Giants are doing well, but some unproven teams. Yeah, I get excited about that.
Sam, you mentioned the defense on the Buffalo Bills. I mean, I think a huge asset this offseason was adding someone of a Von Miller type who's a veteran, who's got Super Bowl championships. What is that presence like in terms of play, but in terms of leadership and development with some of the youngins, to have someone of that magnitude join a team with already these great aspirations?
Well, Von Miller is a two-time Super Bowl champion. He's also a Super Bowl MVP. When you have Von Miller on your team, it's similar to like when you have Tom Brady on offense. You know you have a chance, not just to win in the playoffs, but to win when it really counts, because he's done it before consistently. Now, what helps with this team specifically is that though the Bills have the number one defense, if there was one area improvement or one kind of weak point, it would be their pass rush. They're right around the middle in the NFL in that. Partly because they had young players, right? A.J. Epenesa, Boogie Basham, a lot of young, talented players that needed to grow and to learn. Well, now you get this guy named Von Miller, who, and I, you know, Von and I came out the same year. We played together at the Senior Bowl. Like, he's a phenomenal player, but he's a great dude as well. When he was in Denver, he would do these defense dinners or team dinners at his house just to invite the whole team together, because he understands the importance of team and community and playing as one unit. That's what we're seeing on that Buffalo defense. We're seeing the number one defense that we saw last year, but more so, you see the pressure on the quarterback. See the young guys stepping up and getting better. I think it was Basham who in week one had this tip ball interception. You're seeing Epenesa play really well. You're seeing all these players learn from Von Miller, and they learn from him, and because Von's on the field and playing at such a high level, the offense now has to focus on one guy. They have to either slide their line towards Von or put a running back on, whatever. And that allows all the other players to be one-on-one, and they're winning one-on-one. There's so many guys, even on the interior, who are winning one-on-one. That's what makes Buffalo different. It's easy to say, oh, we're going to rush four and just win. But if you're not winning your one-on-one matchups, it doesn't matter. As a defensive lineman, you have to win one-on-one. And because there's extra attention on Von, we're seeing Buffalo do that at a higher level.
now it almost seems like there's an endless supply of pass rushers for Buffalo. You said it was a weakness, and now, you know, obviously the game was out of hand, but they were able to rest Von Miller a little bit, and it didn't seem to affect anything. Those guys were getting pressure up front, and it seems like that's one of the big leaps that Buffalo has taken from last year to this year, is their ability to rush the passer. And it led me to believe that maybe the strength of this team is the defense more than the offense. They're both functioning at an elite level, obviously, but, you know, the run game maybe in Buffalo is still leaving a little bit to be desired, but nothing on the defensive side of the ball seems to be leaving anything to be desired. Do you think that the strength of this team, even with an MVP candidate in Josh Allen and maybe the best receiver in football in Stephon Diggs, that the defense could be the strength of this team overall?
Man, that's a really good point that you made. And I actually thought that after week one. I said, oh, as great as Josh Allen played the defense, then I went and watched last night. And I was like, man, what Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs are able to do without Gabe Davis. Gabe Davis was top five in yards per catch last year, like over average over 15 yards per catch. Like without Gabe Davis, without a consistent, really, I mean, the run game was better last night. But I still think that, I mean, I still got to give it to Josh Allen. Not unfortunately, but like, you know, like I said, I know their defense is great, but man, like the way this dude plays, it's tough. I'm not going to lie to you. It's really tough because they're both playing at such a high level, you know, like you have Von Miller on defense. And I was going to say the Von Miller of on the offensive side of the ball, but just like different animals. You know what I mean? Like, Josh Allen's a different – and I played with the dude. I'm a defensive end, outside linebacker. He's bigger than me, 6'5", 245. And then Von Miller, freakishly athletic. So, I mean, after week one, I said defense. Week two, now I'm saying offense. Maybe week three, it'll be their special teams. That'll be the strongest part of the team.
Pretty good problem to have.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good problem to have. On the other side of Monday Night Football, or last night, we saw the Eagles being able to have Jalen Hurts look like he's taken that step, maybe a potential Super Bowl preview of Eagles, Bills, you never know. But how were the Eagles so successful in shutting down Justin Jefferson last night?
Darius Slay.
I love him. I mean, like, Slay.
They're going to go watch his interview where they're calling him Darius. He's like, no, my name is Big Play, right? My name, call me Big Play Slay. Like all last year, anytime, if y'all ever have Mr. Slay on this radio anymore, call him Big Play Slay, not Darius Slay, because all this dude made was Big Play. He should have had 6 interceptions. Like, I don't know. Like, he had 2, he should have had 6. He had like 4 pass breakups. He dropped 3, maybe 4 interceptions. But people say, oh, it's because, you know, Justin Jefferson should have ran the right route. No, Big Play Slay, he studies film, so he's got a really great football mind. And so the reason he's able to make all those plays is that he studies film. But even there was that interception that he had where Justin Jefferson didn't, you know, ran it in towards the end zone, and Big Play Slay literally slid sitting on the inside of that route. He does that because he's watched the film. He knows, okay, they only have 2 routes out of this formation, and they run this route 90% of the time. And then all of a sudden he sees Justin Jefferson's release. He's like, oh, I know he's going inside. I'm just gonna play the play. And you saw that on that interception. On the other interception, he played the play. He literally just stood. He didn't even wait. He saw the route. He turned. He looked up. He knows that Kirk Cousins has to target Jefferson in the red zone, and he knows it's a fade ball. He knows that. So he literally plays a play. And he was hobbled a little bit, and he gets the interception. So for me, it was Slay. Pass rush was great, and safety's played great, and all these kinds of things. But why Justin Jefferson was able to be shut down was because the corner, who, great athlete, all these things, but he studies film. Like this dude knew what was going to happen before it happens. And that's the great thing about being on defense. We talk about offense having all these advantages. You can't even pass 5 yards. You can't hit the quarterback too high or too low. Offensive linemen, they're coming out at DBs. You can't go low on them. But what you can do is watch the film. And the film doesn't lie. Coordinators are who they are. And so that's what Big Play Slay, Darius Slay, was able to find out and to exploit.
So superb defense, or superb offense, rather, should always beat superb defense with the rules, as you mentioned, and just the advantages that offensive players have. So for that reason, with Slay shutting down Jefferson the way that he did, I don't know if Kirk Cousins did Justin Jefferson many favors, but were we too quick to maybe anoint Jefferson as maybe the best receiver in the NFL? I mean, there are guys that are automatic that don't get shut down. And, you know, we don't see this matchup. Maybe if Slay is up against Cooper Kupp, he does shut him down. But Kupp, automatic. Adams, automatic. Stephon Diggs, automatic. Is Jefferson in that tier, or was last night an example that, you know, let's pump the brakes a little bit and anointing him as maybe the best receiver in football?
Man, that is such a good question, like, for so many reasons, and I'll rebut it for a couple reasons. Number one, people say that, you know, good offenses should be able to stop or should be able to outdo good defenses. I disagree with that assertion. Like, I've been a part of some really good defenses. In 2018, I was part of that Chicago Bears defense. That was one of the best defenses the NFL had seen in about a decade. Mind you, I'd been injured that year, so I, the last half of the season, I was pretty much supporting my teammates, but I was in the meetings, all this stuff. And I don't know if y'all remember, but y'all remember the LA Rams had Sean McVay, this number one defense, or number one offense. They were amazing, couldn't be stopped. And all of a sudden, they met the Bears mm-hmm. and that number one defense. And we held them to maybe 3 points or 9 points, something. We held them to nothing. And then that same model for this number one offense was exploited in the Super Bowl. But when the Patriots did the same thing. So my whole point is that I believe that good defenses, the best defenses, can stop, slow down, shut down the best offenses. I just also don't believe there are that many of the best defenses or defensive minds / players, right? So that's point number one. But point number two, man, I think big play Slay probably does shut down Cooper Kupp. I think he does. Like Devontae Adams last week or last weekend, what do you have, two catches, you know, or – three catches, right? He didn't play against big plays. He was able to be shut or slowed down. Who else? Jamar Chase, I think he could be shut or slowed down. I'm trying to think who else we say are the best receivers. Like that's, so I think my point is that
Stephon Diggs.
Stephon Diggs, man, the way he's playing, there's not a lot of
We need that matchup. We need the Slay-Diggs matchup.
We do, you know, but I still think that that's probably a better matchup because Stephon Diggs has more experience than Justin Jefferson. Mm-hmm. I think Justin Jefferson, as he continues to get older, he'll learn some of the nuances in not only just in the game of football. People talk about it being a chess match, right? He'll learn some of that. But no, he's still in that top tier. Just because you play against a great opponent doesn't mean you're not in that top tier. And it might have been, like I said, a better matchup with Stephon Diggs on big play Slay, but I still think Slay would have won his fair share.
Last one for you. It's Jimmy G time. San Francisco 49ers are pretty fortunate that they weren't able to find a trade partner because in a season where there are some aspirations, they're without their starting quarterback for the foreseeable future with Trey Lance going down. Should 49ers fans be more confident in Jimmy G and more confident in the team now that their preferred starter and the guy that was chosen to lead this football team won't be around and the guy that took them to the Super Bowl is going to be taking snaps?
I don't think they should be more confident. I think they should be relieved. They should be relieved. And mind you, I do stuff on ESPN, and like, I'm a speaker, and I'm an author, all those kinds of things. But, like, I say a lot of stuff, right? And one of the things I said, which I've been wrong before, all this thing, but I was like, man, why are the 49ers so urgent to trade or get rid of Jimmy G? Like, what if Trey Lance gets hurt? You have a Super Bowl winning, Super Bowl capable roster,
right?
A Super Bowl capable coaching staff. If Lance gets hurt, you should have a backup. Now, mind you, there's also that however much he was owed, $25 million, however much. And there was that thing that people talk. There's a lot of reasons, but the long and short of it is, 49ers fans should be relieved because Trey Lance, they lost to the Bears week one, didn't look good. No, but because there's no drop off. Like with the Cowboys, and I get it, they won last week, but you go from Dak Prescott to an extremely unproven Cooper Rush. Now all of a sudden people are saying, man, their season's over. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But that's a real thing. With most teams, when they lose their quarterback, you go from proven to unproven. With the 49ers, you go from this ascending kind of hopeful star, budding star, your hope is at least, to a proven quarterback who can help you get to the playoffs / has been to the Super Bowl. Now, the knock on Jimmy G is that, man, that's as far as he's been able to take us. And we don't want to just go to the playoffs or go to the Super Bowl. We want to have a quarterback who can help us win in the playoffs or win the Super Bowl. And so for that reason, you should not be more confident because this coaching staff wasn't more confident. The coaching staff chose Trey Lance, period. and they reluctantly took Jimmy G.
You don't think they felt obligated with the investment that they put in?
Obligated to who? Oh, to Trey Lance?
Yeah.
No way. They felt obligated to win, and that's the difference between that team and not every team in the NFL is trying to win and trying to win right now. Just look at their moves that they make. Right? This team, go Seattle. Look at Seattle back in 2012. They signed Matt Flynn to this, I think it was a 3-year, $30 million, like a big deal, at least back then. The NFL's changed, so now it's probably, those deals probably like, instead of $30 million, it's like $100 million. But they signed Matt Flynn to be their quarterback of the future.
Yep.
They draft Russell Wilson in the third or fourth, whatever round they drafted him in, and they start Russell Wilson instead of Matt Flynn. Oh, you don't think they'd be obligated to play the guy they paid? No, they wanted to win. And you know what happened that year? They won a lot of games. The next year, Super Bowl, all these things. So the 49ers, they want to win, period. They have DeMeco Ryans, one of the top defensive coordinators, a dominant defense. Look at the guys on that defense. Talk about Fred Warner. Just look at the guys, right? You have a really good offense. Deebo Samuel, one of the best left tackles, and Trent Williams, one of the best fullbacks. Like, you have a really good team. So, no, they didn't feel obligated to play Trey Lance because we drafted him. They believe in him, and they wanted to win a Super Bowl, right? Think about it. If you have a guy who you believe could take you to win a Super Bowl, when you win, coaches selfishly, GMs, whatever, you get paid more. You get more opportunities. You get all the things that you dream of.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wouldn't sacrifice that just to play Trey Lance. They didn't believe in Trey Lance. They believe that Trey Lance has that extra – their offensive coordinator, Shanahan, he was the offensive coordinator in 2012 or 13, whatever RG3's rookie year was. The head coach, but he was the offensive coordinator for RG3 when RG3 won Rookie of the Year. My point is, like, he likes athletic quarterbacks that can move in the pocket and make him that can help just do more things than an immobile quarterback can do. You saw what's the dude's name who's sitting back there getting sacked, Matt Ryan for the Colts. He was just sitting back there getting sacked. You know what I mean? Like, so anyways, no, there was no obligation. This is like, man. John Lynch, the GM, is saying, do we want to just get to the playoffs or do we want to win the playoffs? Do we want to just get to the Super Bowl or win, right? But that's kind of my whole point. And I think that they believe that Trey Lance can help them win in those big moments. Like you saw, I think personally, because I played in this division, you saw people like Colin Kaepernick do early in his career. They went from Alex Smith in San Francisco to Colin Kaepernick. Those are different coaching staff. But there's like Alex Smith was a consistent winner, and he went on to other places and won. But there's this other kind of level that Colin Kaepernick could take the team to, which ultimately led them to a Super Bowl. So no, there was no obligation whatsoever. I don't think. I believe it was, we know how far we can go with Jimmy G. We want to get further.
Sam, before we let you go, we were speaking about, somehow it just happened to come up today, about books and the book fairs. And we know that you're an author of a book, Let the World See You, How to Be Real in a World Full of Fakes. What's the number one tip you can give us and the listeners when we're going about our day-to-day lives with this hassle that we deal with, the fakes?
Yeah, no, thank you so much. Like, the number one tip is, like, I would say, like, there's a phrase I've heard that says, like, take the time to play the right note. Oh. I think so often in life we get caught up in, like, what everyone else is doing and where everyone else is going. And we forget that, like, oh, no, we have cool and unique gifts and we have opportunities and there are things that we're, like, uniquely suited for. But instead of doing the things that we're kind of called to do or supposed to do, we're so focused on the fakes, right? We're so focused on what we see on social media or on Twitter or these people that are, well, man, they're you know, they're this way and I got to be that way because that's how I'm going to succeed. Like, my book is about what it means to be real, to be seen, to be loved, to be authentic, to be genuine, right? It's called Let the World See You, How to Be Real in a World Full of Fakes. And part of it is, like, I think when you're you, I think that, like, here's what I'll say. Pretending and being fake and trying to, like, fit in, that might get you in a door or two. But I believe that being you will open up doors you could never imagine. And I've seen that happen in my life firsthand, from having a chance to spend time with a couple different presidents, because I just happen to be me, President of the United States, having a chance to go to, even on football, like, a crazy, weird, amazing things that happen. There's some football stories in that book There's some life stories talking about me and being young and being insecure, never believing I'd make it to the NFL or never believing I'd be on TV, all these things. Like, this book is really a book about belief and about hope and about love, because I think that when you're you, the world changes. And so it's available on Amazon or anywhere you get your books, Let the World See You. But that this book is really, it's, I was funny. I was, you know, we have a 6-week-old at home, right? We have four kids now, goodness. 7-year-old, a 5-year-old. Thank you. Yeah. The 4-year-old and the 6-week-old. And I was carrying my 6-week-old, holding him last night as I'm watching Monday Night Football. Right. And I was like standing around trying to help him to sleep. And I'm looking at him and my TV kind of, when it goes on sleep mode, it shows these pictures. Right. And I saw a picture of my 5-year-old daughter when she was 2. And I was like, oh man, like God is good. A picture of my, you know, I think my another one of my sons. Right. And then I saw a picture of my book, you know, and somebody bought a couple hundred books that I signed and autographed. And in a lot of ways, like that book means a lot to me, because I think it's going to help change people's lives. In the same way, like the fact that like we have kids, we want to raise them to help, like, you know, raise them to be like for signs and wonders, like change people's lives and also be like who we believe God made them to be. But like, that's how special this book is to me. And I've heard from people who have read it, they've been, you know, they've been changed. And so anyways, I'm so glad you all asked about it. That means so much to me. But this book, I think, will change your life. And so it's called Let the World See You. It's about what it means to be real, to be known, to be loved, to be genuine, to be authentic. Because when you're you, I think that God gets the glory. I think that the people around you benefit. I think the world around you thrives.
Wow. What a beautiful message, Sam. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about that and to share some personal sides of it as well. It was a pleasure. We'll catch up with you later this season.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Sam Acho, former NFL linebacker and current ESPN analyst. And yeah, that book is in the shopping cart.
I mean, I was just going to say, people come on and, you know,
that was amazing.
Talk about their book and they want to, you know, maybe get that out there. That is the best way to push a book. Like that was from the heart. And I mean, you were emotional. You were riding the wave there.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's on the must read list, I think, too. But Ty Dunn's up there too. I think I bought 2 books today.
We're pushing. We are the new Scholastic Book Fair.
That's the theme of the day.
Speaking of, keep it coming. The text line 590-590. We have a couple Scholastic Book Fair comments. My daughter started junior kindergarten this year. Congrats. First day she brought home the Scholastic's order form. My wife and I were pumped. Book prices were reasonable. And we just got a tweet in. With the Scholastic Book Fair set up. I appreciate that in the text line. Memory lane. But order this one from Sam because it sounds like it could change your life. Let's take a break. Let's try to make you some money to purchase all these books that we're pushing on the Fan Morning Show. It's time for the Wake and Rake brought to you by Unibet. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Bam, bam.
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money.
On Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It's time for the Wake and Rake, brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. Saw some Unibet promos in the later Monday Night Football game last night in the stadium. Unibet has arrived.
Unibet's taken over.
Taking over Unibet.
We love Unibet.
We love Unibet. We don't love that there's no NFL tonight. But we did make some money, some of us, on some of our choices yesterday.
Quick recap.
Yeah.
Wake and Rake does not hit.
You deserve to recap.
Wake and Rake does not hit. I think we were 6 yards short on A.J. Brown.
That's tough, eh?
So my read on that game was off.
The Bills definitely covered the spread.
Bills covered the spread for us. So we had one half of the Wake and Rake. Of course, that doesn't get us anything. But we made up for it. Same game parlay. Mm-hmm. There was a little controversy over Gabriel Davis's involvement. So if you had him in the parlay, you had to take him out. But if you did rebuild the parlay, the same game parlay that we talked about yesterday, I think it was still about plus 900.
Mm-hmm.
I actually messed up when I put it back in and didn't take the total that I advocated, but it still went under the number. So it was a little bit better for me, mistakenly. But still, we're going to try and hit these same game parlays. Maybe we'll go 2 for 3. At these big numbers, we'll try and have something for Thursday. But for now, we got to go with another baseball Wake and Rake.
My lock of the night failed to come through three times in a row.
So I think
it's we can retire that. I felt a
no,
lot of
I don't think you should retire it.
Okay.
I think you forced it in. You were Kirk Cousins in primetime, forcing it into coverage.
There was a lot of opportunities down the line there where I was like, Thielen's going to get this. Like, I'm like sitting there on the edge of my seat. He caught it with, 1 yard from the end zone.
It was Kirk let you down.
It
wasn't even Thielen that let you down.
Thielen was doing his best. He didn't have any receptions for about 80% of the game, and then he came in hot down the stretch, and I thought, this is it.
But, and he was forcing it to Jefferson, too. Like, it was like, the Vikings just, it was just a brutal
everything
performance.
Everything he did was forced.
What probably went into your thought process was that big play was going to be on Jefferson, which would open it up for your boy.
I'm sure
that went into the thought process there, and that should have happened, but you can't always trust Kirk Cousins to get things done.
I should have known better.
A couple takeaways from last night. You know I'm a big futures market betting guy. I like that. Like the narrative stuff. Like tracking that. Couple things that stand out. We talked to Sam Acho just in the previous block about Justin Jefferson. His inability to feast against a really solid corner in Darius Slay. He says that Kupp's not automatic. But I believe Cooper Kupp is automatic. And my whole thought process here coming into the season was for Offensive Player of the Year, fade last year's Offensive Player of the Year. Fade Cooper Kupp, who was the best receiver in football last year. But who were those emerging talents? It was Justin Jefferson. It was Ja'Marr Chase. And through 2 weeks, they've had a difficult time and maybe showed that they're not ready to overtake the crown in terms of the best receiver in the NFL. So if you could find Cooper Kupp at any decent price for Offensive Player of the Year, I think that's a decent look. But Nick Sirianni is probably the big one. Coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. I think his coach of the year price is decent. I think they have a chance to win a ton of games. And if you win a ton of games, the coach is going to get a lot of credit for it. Kevin O'Connell was like the trendy pick for that award, had been the favorite. And he just showed that he has flaws in his system still. And I think Jalen Hurts could win the MVP just the same way that Sirianni's going to get credit.
After last
night. Jalen Hurts could get that credit.
Maybe.
It's probably still Josh Allen's to lose. Mm-hmm. But, like, what better candidate in the NFC than Jalen Hurts? Tom Brady's, you know, he's taking Wednesdays off. Aaron Rodgers doesn't have the receivers. So if you're looking at, like,
Jalen
who's going to be the
plus
highest.
Plus 1,000 for a regular season MVP right
I don't
now.
Mind it. The highest performing quarterback, I think, in the NFC this year will be Jalen Hurts, which means he'll be in the conversation. But he'll have to outperform Josh Allen, which is going to be difficult. So just three notes on sort of the awards markets and how they might fluctuate this week.
I was looking to get that Cooper Kupp Offensive Player of the Year and Coach of the Year line for you.
Probably not up yet.
It's all right. It's good, something to consider, something to chew on moving down the line. There was also some changes. Jalen Hurts was 14-1 odds to win NFL MVP. And then he moved all the way up to, 1,000?
Plus 1,000, yeah.
It's a big change in one game.
Yeah, but I think it's deserving.
Oh,
sure. The numbers are going to just be off the charts. If we see anything think of the division. There is no challenge in the division. That's probably 6 wins there. 5 at the minimum, I think. Lots of opportunity to put up numbers. He did it against what could be one of the better teams in the NFC too, in the Minnesota Vikings. I think there's going to be a lot of positive attention given towards the Philadelphia Eagles and the main cast members there this year.
Who do the Eagles have this week?
I will check that. Do you want to go through the board
before
we do? Again, that's
another opportunity. Let's do some lines for this week.
So, yeah, I think it's worth going through early because you might be able to get a decent number before it gets steamed up and the lines change. You might be able to get better numbers during... At the start of the week, so I think it makes sense because there's no football tonight and there's one baseball game that we're going to break down with the Blue Jays in Philly. But to just go through and see if we have anything that stands out to us on the week 3 NFL board. I mean, we just can't get enough of the NFL, so why not?
My Detroit Lions over the lowly Minnesota Vikings.
So they're 6-point dogs right now in Minnesota. I mean, that stands out to me too.
I
would
love
7 points. I would love to get the 7. Mm-hmm. But I think this is Detroit all year. Like the high total 52. They're going to play in the 50s all year long. They're going to keep playing even when they're down. They're going to be entering through the back door consistently this year if they are down. And I'm not convinced they're going to be down in this game. I think they're going to get scored on for sure. Mm-hmm. That's just how their game states are going to be. But
they're so fun, and I would love to watch them, and I love to cheer them on.
I think Detroit can do a lot of what Philly did this week, or last night, this upcoming weekend. So I think that's one that I have circled as well. I love the Ravens, 3-point favorites in New England this weekend. The Ravens have that explosive offense. They just got, you know, they lost at their own game, I feel like, in many ways, where they just ran out of gas. Literally, I think defensively, trying to chase around Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, and they just didn't have enough to go four quarters. But guess what team is not explosive offensively? It's the New England Patriots. Mm-hmm. They don't have weapons. They have Mac Jones, who played pretty well over the weekend, but I don't think is capable of winning a shootout against Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson's still in that MVP discussion, I think, as well. I think Baltimore is going to score a ton of points in New England this weekend and cover that number.
So we said Dolphins, Bills would be kind of the big game of the weekend. Bills minus 240 on the money line, and the spread's 5.5.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait to watch that one, but they're kind of marketing the Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady showdown as the other premier.
I think Buffalo, Miami is the game to watch, mm-hmm. and I'm going to keep betting Buffalo. Until I lose, why wouldn't you? We just saw a stat roll through. Defending Super Bowl champions, top seed in the AFC last year. Combined score of 72-17.
It's pretty good.
Winning on aggregate, 72-17. That means they can blow out teams. They can blow out pretty much any team. So I think Miami is capable of being blown out as well.
I just got some breaking news on my phone here. Zdeno Chara announces retirement after 24 NHL seasons right now.
There you go.
Zdeno Chara.
Probably time.
He just did it on his Instagram. I'm just going to click his post. Could read it for you. After 25 seasons of professional hockey, 1,680 NHL regular season games, 200 Stanley Cup playoff games, and hundreds of international games, I'm proud to announce my decision to retire from the National Hockey League. In doing so, I'm honored to return to TD Garden today to sign a one-day contract with the Boston Bruins and officially finish my career with the team that has meant so much to me and my family. Mm-hmm. There are so many people that have helped contribute to my success, including all of you, and I look forward to properly thanking everyone this afternoon. Thank you, Big Z.
Not the most popular.
No, but a legend.
Not the most popular player in this market, but someone who is like a true unicorn. Like, they aren't built like Zdeno Chara. Big Z is Big Z for a reason. He's a different type of dude, different type of player, different type of skill set, and one that really hasn't been recreated since. I mean, this guy was a different breed, and he was involved in one of the more lopsided and like NHL or league altering sort of trades when he went from Ottawa to Boston. Like, he kind of changed Boston's trajectory, put them on a path where they were competing for Stanley Cups over the last 15 years. An automatic Hall of Fame player.
Yeah,
he'll be in 5 years' time now that he's finishing up his career. I wonder if he wanted to keep playing. It was kind of a bummer that he had to leave Boston the way he did. He wanted to keep going, and I don't think they wanted him around anymore, despite the fact that he still could play at a reasonably high level in a sheltered role. But it's nice that he's going to get that moment. He's going to be up in the rafters there at TD Garden, going to be a Hall of Famer, as I mentioned. One of the truly great players of our generation.
For sure. And Leaf fans probably have some mixed feelings about their history against Zdeno Chara, but I think you can put that aside to respect the player, respect the length, the longevity of his career, the competitiveness that he had. I think he's one of those players that you don't want to play against, but you would love to have, you know, on your team, someone a part of your core. It's great that he's going to come back to Boston for the one-day contract. I mean, those are really special days, and it's a nice sentiment to do. I feel like sometimes people think it could be a little cheesy, but this is where he spent his career, and he should be honored there, and he will be. As he said, he'll be in the rafters. He'll be brewing for life.
Definitely. Yeah, it is a little cheesy sometimes, but this one makes sense. Like, it doesn't make sense when it's like, how much of a lasting impact? Well, you can't really quibble with Zdeno Chara's impact in Boston and for the Bruins. 200 career playoff games. Quite the career.
Cross-checked a couple people.
The first thing that comes to my mind is that punch on John Tavares, which is like, that's part of the reason why he's not the most popular guy. But if he was on your team, boy, you'd love him.
I'm just looking up who the oldest NHL player is currently now, because if he's
we lost Spezza.
Mm-hmm.
We lost Chara. Thornton, I don't think, has officially done anything.
Did you see him out there skating with the Sharks?
He is?
Yeah.
Oh.
He's out there skating with the Sharks.
Mm.
What do you think of that?
That
pursuit He's wearing Leafs pants, though.
That pursuit of the cup is, I guess, being... The white flag is being waved there if he's joining the Sharks. But I don't know. It's tough. Like, I don't want to dissuade anyone from continuing their career. I just don't think Joe Thornton can help a team anymore. But if he's going to go home and actually play a season, not do the one-day contract, like, I'm down for that.
Mm-hmm.
I always want Joe Thornton content, so keep it rolling.
Damn.
He's got to be the oldest.
Andy Green, Mike Smith, Craig Anderson,
I guess
Joe
Mike
Thornton, and
still
Zdeno Chara. So it's Joe Thornton, technically.
Yeah.
But I saw a video of him skating out on the ice wearing a San Jose Sharks helmet and Toronto Maple Leafs pants.
What happened to the Florida gear?
I don't know.
Panthers didn't make
the trip.
Panthers held on to the gear, like you in Dartmouth.
Oh, yeah, we'll never give that up. I don't care if I can't fit in it one day. Oh, maybe Panther shoulder pads underneath.
That's where
gloves.
We're at. That's where we're at with Joe
Panthers,
Thornton. Just
gloves.
Pieces of every organization he's played with.
San Jose helmet, Leafs pants. It's a look. It's a yard sale. All right. Wow. I'm sad about that news, but great to share it live. We'll talk more Zdeno Chara, I'm sure. See lots of tributes about him this week. Congrats on a lengthy career. 45 years old.
Probably time. 45.
I think it's time. All right. You want to do some best bets for us today?
Yeah. We got the Jays tonight. Is there anything else before we... on the board, I think, you know, we're going to obviously go through.
What is your feel on Packers Bucks?
That was the one we want. I think I'm going to bet Packers money line.
Yeah, plus
I feel like it's a coin flip game
right now.
Right now, the Bucks are 2.5-point favorites at home. I feel like there's a little value on the money line.
Both quarterbacks have looked extremely displeased with their team and their positions. And
yeah, but I think more so Brady.
Do you see him smashing iPads?
And he's going to be without Mike Evans this weekend, who's suspended for, I guess, inciting that brawl.
Oh, he came flying.
I don't know if that's a suspension.
I didn't...
Got kicked out of the game.
I thought it was awesome.
Two games for that?
Yeah, I'm surprised.
It wasn't like swinging helmets like Myles Garrett. Wasn't that bad.
No.
Anyway.
But yeah, I think your narrative with the Bucks being a little bit shorthanded, maybe Tom Brady looks the most frustrated I've ever seen him on the podium. People are like, just, man, if you don't want to be here, just retire.
Yeah, it's a weird situation.
It's weird.
Obviously, there's a lot of like the personal stuff, but him taking the Wednesdays off. And if things like go south... Like, if things don't go well, and they're still finding a way, they beat the Saints. That's a big divisional game. The Saints have been a problem for them in recent seasons, or at least since Tom Brady came over.
It doesn't look as easy anymore.
It looks like a bit of a grind. Mm-hmm. That's why I like the Eagles. Maybe look at them in the NFC market.
All right. Okay, so we'll obviously set up a lot of Sunday football on Friday. But yeah, that's my take on this week ahead.
Yeah, let's go to the Jays.
Similar ones. Okay, Jays. Jays are back in action after a day off playing in Philly against the Phillies. They're -114 on the money line. Kind of a toss-up game they have here on Unibet. Over-under set at 8.5. You got Ross Stripling on the mound tonight. Potentially having Alejandro Kirk back. They're up against Kyle Gibson, who actually has some pretty good numbers against Toronto's top bats. Springer is 1-for-13. Bichette 0-for-3, Matt Chapman 0-for-12, and Teoscar Hernandez 0-for-7 against Kyle Gibson. So some of the big names that have been hot haven't traditionally been very effective.
Mm.
But the Jays are playing really well. They have the best September record in the MLB. Bo Bichette has been Bo Bichette from another world this past month. So those things are kind of conflicting narratives going into tonight. Any feel on how tonight will go for you?
Yeah, maybe the under is the better pick at 8.5. You know, we got Ross Stripling on the mound. We can tend to rely on him to keep things within reason. But it feels like the Jays at a, you know, reasonably close coin flip number, -114 on Unibet right now, just to have some skin in the game, cheer for the Jays. It feels like a decent spot to do that. Always get behind Ross Stripling's start. So it seems palatable at -114. And you'd rather cheer for the Jays than cheer for no runs to be scored in the game. So that's probably where I will go. I don't feel particularly strong either way. But I think when you can get the Jays at this sort of line with the way that they're playing and the incentives in reach, it adds up to a decent play.
I'll say one thing on the other side. I looked at the numbers against Ross Stripling. Not too much to note, but...
National League Ross, though.
Bryce Harper has done pretty well against Ross Stripling. He's
a new guy, though. New guy with the Jays.
That's right.
Not worried about those NL numbers.
Well, right. Flush them.
Flush them.
All right. I'm just providing
No, that's the appropriate context. I'm hearing it.
All right. So that's kind of the layout for tonight. I think you're right on the play. I don't really have much, honestly. After a day off as well, I think the Jays are coming in nice, well-rested. Phillies have a huge road. They just dropped four straight on the road. They got a little bit of a daunting task back this week. They're playing some teams hungry for wins. So I think tonight is a really big game for both teams. My best bet does not come from this game, though, for our Wake and Rake.
A little theme to our Wake and Rake today.
I'll
let you start it off.
For the first time ever, I believe we're doing a Nerfy Wake and Rake, which is a no runs first inning.
Mm-hmm.
Both of us have selected two that we like. I got the Astros and the Rays. We just saw Shane McClanahan pitch. He's incredible. The Astros are a good team. The Rays are a good team. The no runs first inning is now moved significantly since I put it in our Wake and Rake. Mm-hmm. -150 at this point, but I locked it in during the break, and that's going to be my bet.
Well, it's a good sign, at least, that the market agrees with us. And in an effort to get some sleep, I suppose, we'll do the Nerfy from the late game so we don't have to go through all nine innings.
That's nice.
But we'll lean on Adam Wainwright and Mike Clevenger to do the same as McClanahan and Javier. They keep that one scoreless through one, and we have a decent little parlay.
So both no runs first inning, Astros, Rays, and Cardinals, Padres, that together on Unibet is +203. That's going to be your Wake and Rake today. We will continue to set up all NFL this weekend. I don't think I have a lock for you today. I'm not going to force it. I need a day off.
No, leave that to Kirk Cousins.
Yeah. Yikes. Okay, so Blue Jays are actually early game tonight, a little bit, 6:40.
Like that.
So you get your day started early. That's all for you. Yankees, the Aaron Judge tour continues. They're playing the Pirates. Feel a little bit confident about him being able to put another home run in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
That's something to consider. And then
too shy of the record right now?
Too shy of the record. Pujols is tonight as well against the Padres. Losing a little bit of steam on that one. But let's go Aaron Judge possibly to get another home run. That could be the lock.
You're pulling the Kirk again.
All right. That was the Wake and Rake brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. That's it for us today on the Fan Morning Show. Justin and Ailish, the JD Bunkus podcast up next. Thanks for listening. Subscribe, download, and we'll see you tomorrow.